The debut short story collection from Megan Mayhew Bergman is called Birds of a Lesser Paradise. Now for a debut, it's gotten a lot of attention, including picks as Barnes & Noble Discover Great New Writers, an Amazon Top 10, and an Indie Next pick, as well as a Star Review and Publishers Weekly, and a selection from O Magazine as a must read. Bergman, who grew up in rural North Carolina, now lives in a small farm in Vermont with her veterinarian husband and her two daughters, as well as many animals. The characters in her stories are all strong female characters, mostly in rural settings. And so the first thing I asked her was whether that was an intention from the beginning.
Yeah, not at first. I mean, I with the protagonists, I did want strong first-person female narrators because it was a hard time in my life, and so I think I was taking some sort of respite in my fiction or interested in the idea of women who sort of confront difficulty and build themselves back up, or even women who had sort of taken feminism for granted and then found themselves married or with children and confronting these challenges in a real way when they'd only confronted them philosophically before. So I think sort of tough, feminist women that strive to be competent, still coming to grips with, these very real issues about motherhood and marriage and building a life perhaps in a rural place in a bad economy. Those things all really interested me. As far as the human-animal bond goes, that was accidental and I think more of an obsession that kept cropping up in the stories. Very autobiographical, I guess. My husband's a veterinarian and we live on a small farm in Vermont, and we have four dogs and six chickens and two goats and a horse and a goldfish and four cats. And I'm surrounded by animals, and I'm also surrounded by a husband and a father-in-law as veterinarians who are helping people make decisions about their animals, whether it's whether to euthanize the animal or how much money to pour into, say, chemotherapy for a dog who's already 10 years old. I mean, these really tough decisions that people face, and especially in a rural place. I was just intrigued by what our care of animals says about us, what our priorities are, what we feel for them. All of those things were very real for me at the time and so found their way into the stories.
Birds of a Lesser Paradise actually takes its name from a story in the book, which features a father and daughter who live on a swamp in North Carolina and give bird tours for a living. So I was curious about the bird theme.
Yeah, that's also a more recent obsession. When we moved to Vermont, I found myself noticing birds for the first time. It wasn't that I hadn't noticed them when I was living in North Carolina, but I was really seeing them and hearing them, and they were at the feeder, and I was seeing different bird life. There were more pileated woodpeckers, for example, in and around my house, and so I started looking up Sibley bird guides, and I read a book called Hope is a Thing with Feathers, which is a line from an Emily Dickinson poem, and it was about all of the bird species in North America that have vanished in the 20th century pretty much because of human need or desire, such as the hat industry or people feeling that the birds were picking off their crops. But anyway, I was, it's one of those relationships, I think, people and animals and the choices we make, and also ties back to human exceptionalism, which really interests me, this idea that many humans, I think, forget that we're actually part of the animal kingdom and act accordingly. And surprisingly, that's one of the more controversial aspects of the book or things that I've mentioned in interviews. I've actually had some surprisingly negative feedback about human exceptionalism, and it's funny to me that some people really find it something to argue with that humans are actually part of the animal kingdom, because biologically and scientifically we very much are. We're mammals and primates, and so that fascinates me, and that sort of tension.
Although Bergman's stories are nearly all set in rural environments, she neither romanticizes nor degrades those settings.
You can tell when I read your book that you've experienced these communities and you're not just like either romanticizing them or kind of mocking them in a sense.
No, you're right. I mean, those are the two risks, really, when working with a rural place, that you're either going to sentimentalize it or make it too easy and too romantic and too dewy and too 1950s good neighbor-y, or you're going to mock it and think everyone's backwoods. And what I've really found living in small-town Vermont is that, there are definitely a group of people here that are under a lot of economic pressure and are struggling and have, you know, not really left town ever. But then there's also another group of people living here intentionally, sort of forming this sort of intentional community. I'm thinking about conversations I've recently had with Lauren Groff about her book Arcadia, which takes place on a commune, and I'm not really going to that level of intentionality, but this idea that people choose a lifestyle that they think more accurately reflects their preferences and their beliefs. And, you know, in small-town Vermont, again, there is a lot of economic pressure. There aren't a lot of jobs. The hurricane hit Vermont, southern Vermont, where I live, very, very hard. But there's a great sense of community, of gardening, of sort of bartering and exchange. And it's a really physical life. I just feel like people are outside here, and there's just a sort of reality to it. You can't hide behind your computer as effectively here, and nor do I think most people here want to. And that all sort of excites me and reminds me of the town I grew up in, Rocky Mount, North Carolina, that was a very small tobacco town. I really am interested in agricultural communities. They're very unique pressures there and unique personality types that seem to inhabit them. One thing that my editor said about my book is she summarized it as saying it's interested in the way the pull of biology on our modern lives, and I love that idea. Again, just this reminder that we are physical beings, we are animals, and there are things, be it childbearing or, you know, having contact with our own food, making our own things, that I think might be a little bit more deeply satisfying, even biologically satisfying or culturally satisfying in a way that our digital world is not. And believe me, I'm not trying to be prescriptive or haughty here. I spend a lot of time on Facebook.
The first story, the last line is a killer. But I know the truth now, what maniacs we are, sick with love, all of us. Now tell me, when you're working on a story, especially maybe this story in particular, how do you know how to end a story?
Yeah, I think that's when that sort of second sense as a writer comes in, where you feel your way to it and you read it over 100 times. And if you can't imagine pushing it further and it stays with you the right way. And yeah, I recently attended a lecture by Rebecca Mackay, who's a fiction writer, about endings. And she categorized all the different ways you can end a story, which fascinated me because I've never thought through it scientifically, I guess. I just sort of found my way to it. And this line, when I got to it, I just knew it was the right one. You know, I struggled with it's a little bit of an epiphany, which is can often be a sort of gimmicky way
right,
to end a
sure.
story. But to me, it just felt right, and I get so much feedback on that last line. I still, every now and then, when I read it out loud, my voice will catch when I read it, and I'll want to sob.
Mm-hmm.
And I think crying at your own story is worse than laughing at your own joke, probably. But I do love that line.
Birds of a Lesser Paradise comes out this summer in paperback. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.